It's a freedom machine like no other. Starting, growing, and cashing out of your own business.
Then all hell breaks loose.
Burned out, carrying all the weight on your shoulders, fighting fire after fire, never getting a break. But that was so yesterday.
It's time for your business breakthrough. Break out of the bottleneck. Break through to new levels of success. And break into a life you love. Now from Park Avenue in New York City, here's attorney, strategist, and SBA small business champion, Nina Kaufman. This is the Business Breakthrough Podcast.
Hello, how are you? Welcome to Business Breakthrough. I'm your host, Nina Kaufman, coming to you from the heart of New York City, and I'm glad you're here today. Thanks for tuning in. In this episode, we're going to chat with entrepreneurial veteran Frank Bria. He's the author of the book Scale, and we're going to talk about why it's tough to fire yourself. That's right, you're fired. And you're going to have to be fired if you're going to scale your business. Now, before we jump into that, be sure to go to businessexponential.com to download our report, 10 Steps to a $1 Million Business, which will also give you some great tips on how to build, grow, and scale your business, businessexponential.com. Now, I wanted to have Frank on the show to talk about some of the challenges of scaling for service businesses. I mean, what does scaling really mean? What does that look like? And how can we as business owners wrap our minds around the changes that that's going to mean for our business? Now, Frank touches on the analogy of a rocket launch, and I'll confess I am a secret NASA geek. I mean, I love shows about space and space travel, and remember going to the planetarium with my grandma when I was a kid, and all of the science behind it. And when I went to the Kennedy Space Center, I was in pig heaven, but I digress. So you ever seen the launch of a spacecraft? You ever seen that, like, either on television or in movies, as it makes its way into space to orbit the Earth? The first thing you see, there's a spark. And then the flames come out. And then there's a giant fireball as the shuttle is propelled upward. And to reach orbit, you know, you've probably seen those enormous fuel tanks on either side to get the shuttle past the what they call the atmospheric drag and the gravity. But once you gain that altitude and you reach where you need to be for orbit, you need to let go of the fuel tanks. What got you to orbit is not what keeps you in orbit. And it's the same thing with our business. You know, we have an idea, that's the spark, and we start to work on it, and customers start to come in, and that's the flame, and then maybe there's a giant fireball as we start to propel ourselves upward. But many of us have felt like we're in launch mode for so long, we don't know what orbit mode looks like or how our business needs to change. But if we don't jettison those old ideas, we can't move forward. C.S. Lewis has a wonderful quote about an egg turning into the bird. He says, it may be hard for an egg to turn into a bird. It would be a lot harder for it to learn to fly while remaining an egg. We're like eggs at present. But you can't go on indefinitely just being an ordinary, decent egg. You have to be hatched or you go bad. So as we are thinking about growing our business and we want more, we want that personal and we want that financial freedom and we want that solid foundation, we're going to hatch. We're going to have to jettison those fuel tanks, to completely mix and match my metaphors. And that's what I'm really looking forward to exploring with Frank Bria today. So a little bit about our guest. Frank Bria is an entrepreneurial veteran with high tech and financial services expertise. He's helped businesses grow on 4 continents. 4. In addition to marketing and selling himself, he's worked with numerous firms to help them achieve 6-figure contract deals. And he specializes in helping businesses scale, near and dear to my heart, through marketing automation, revenue growth, and productization. We're going to talk about that as well. And Frank lives in Gilbert, Arizona, just outside Phoenix, with his wife and 3 daughters. And we're delighted to have him here on Business Breakthrough. Frank, thanks so much for being with us today.
Nina, it is an honor to be on your show. Thanks so much for having me.
Oh, I'm glad you're here. So, you know, you and I bandy about the term scale. And just as a baseline, I wanted to get your feedback on what we're using the word scale, but what does that mean in human terms for most service businesses?
Yeah, you know, it's interesting because people do have different definitions of scale. You know, for me, for example, and I work like you with a lot of service businesses, and there are very particular challenges that people face when they're scaling. You know, other industries have different kinds of problems. For example, manufacturing companies, they experience scale in a very different way, right? You know, I am stuffing widgets into envelopes and mailing them out from my home office. And at some point, you can no longer do that anymore. You know, and so you have to go find someone to do that for you. And that's a concept of scale. And a lot of times, what's really unique about service businesses is that there's a little hidden gremlin inside of scaling a service business that is not true for product businesses and oftentimes gets overlooked. In my experience, people who have good service businesses but haven't scaled it yet still have this step where they need to productize their service. I'll give you an example.
Okay.
When I was initially a consultant, you know, I kind of naively went out to the marketplace. I hung my little sign outside the door. I put my little website and I'm like, ta-da, I'm a consultant.
Yay.
And, you know, I would talk to people and they would say, so what do you do? And I would say, well, what do you need? I can do a lot of things. I'm a smart guy and you like me, you respect me. So, you know, bring me in and let's hear about your current challenges and I'm going to knock them out of the park. And you know what? That worked, you know, for a while. I had some great engagements that way. And, you know, that may be an extreme example, but many service businesses are kind of the same way. We get caught in the, I can do that for you syndrome.
Okay.
You know, basically we get caught in this place where, hey, if it needs to get done, I can figure out how to get it done. To scale a service business, though, we need to get out of that. We need to productize. And one of the things that I had to do is I had to say, okay, yeah, I might be a semi-smart guy, but that doesn't mean I can solve everyone's problems, or should I solve everyone's problems? So I need to focus. I need to hone. I need to create a product. And that is a step that oftentimes gets missed. And I spend a lot of time talking about that in my book, because if you can't figure that part out, the rest of it becomes very difficult. It's tough to staff around an organization that does everything, right? It's tough to staff. It's tough to build processes around superheroes. Well, I just need to find more superheroes that can do everything. So I think that's one element of scale that is really particular for service businesses that we oftentimes miss.
Right. And as I also see it, and it kind of ties in with that, we talked about in an earlier conversation about why it's tough to fire yourself. And for so many service businesses, so much, you know, like I like to say that the bottleneck is often at the top of the bottle. Actually, it's always at the top of the bottle. And when so much revolves around the owner, they can't scale in the sense of getting the business off their shoulders and firing themselves. And part of being able to do that, as you say, is productize the service so that they can bring in other people, but also be much clearer in their offering. So as you talk about productizing the service, I can imagine listeners saying, what does that even mean?
Right.
So in real English, because again, as a lawyer, I'm often accused of not speaking English. So in real English, can you break that down for what that looks like for a service business?
Yeah. It's interesting you mentioned, it is exactly the characteristics that make service business entrepreneurs successful that keeps them from scaling easily. These exact same characteristics that made us successful are the things that are going to stop us from taking it to the next level. Just like you said, the bottleneck, because we are good at doing a lot of different things. You have to be if you're an entrepreneur, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so I think that productizing your service comes down to three major components. So first of all, we need to focus. Focus, focus, focus. What exact niche are you going to serve? What singular outcome are you going to be held responsible for in your service? One. And this is a tough thing for people. I sit down and talk with them and I say, what single outcome do you provide? Oh, well, we provide a lot of different outcomes. Yeah, bad answer. Pick one. Now, there may be extras. There may be bonuses that come from that one big benefit, but you need to be able to identify the one big outcome, whether that is increasing revenue, whether that is helping you lose weight, whether that is, you know, making you healthier, whatever that is, you have to pick the one.
focusing on a single outcome is not the same as focusing on a deliverable.
Yes.
So my having a law practice, my writing a contract is not the outcome. It's the protection, the safety, the security, the clarity of expectations with another business partner.
Exactly. That's a really good point. The things that we do are kind of like the features of our service business. The benefits are the outcome. I like to joke around with people and say, I mean, it's not a joke. I really believe it, but there's really only four reasons people buy stuff. They buy stuff to make money, to save money, to stay out of jail, or to have a better life. That's it. Like, that's it. There's just four. So it helps us really focus down what is our outcome. So a lot of times I'll talk to people, especially like in business coaching is a classic example, right? Because I say to them, what outcome are you trying to get? Well, we want them to make more money, to have more time, da 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 da. And I say, listen, it's one of the four. You were either around to help them make money or to have a better life. Now, having a better life may make more money, or making more money may create a better life, but you, in branding and productizing and standing out for who you are, you have to pick one and say, this is my one. And that helps people clear away, as you said, the deliverables. It's not the contracts. It's not the 50-page report. It's not the technology solution that gets delivered. Those are all things that help us get the outcome. So that's a really good clarification.
Great. So thank you. So you were saying things that entrepreneurs
so step
need to
one.
Do. Number one is focus. What's focus. The outcome you provide?
Yeah, absolutely. Step two is to understand the process by which the outcome is created. Now, oftentimes, this is a series of deliverables, but not always. Oftentimes, when we think about that singular outcome, we have a little bit of an aha experience, and you start to realize how many deliverables you're creating that actually aren't supporting the outcome. They're just there because either you thought you were creating extra value by delivering this extra stuff, and therefore you're able to raise your price. Or, well, everyone sort of expects these things to come along for the ride. But when you really get focused on that singular outcome, you can really streamline, and all of these extra processes can kind of fall by the wayside.
Can you give an example of where there was a lot of extra stuff that, you know, in working with a client or even in your own business, that you were able to shave away so you had a simpler and more elegant outcome?
Sure. Yeah. So in one of my larger contracts, I was working with a financial institution, and it was my job to help them create a better onboarding experience for customers who were opening checking and savings accounts. Okay. Because my consulting practice that I still do some of, but as I kind of was scaling that, was in the banking space.
Okay.
So when I was hired originally, there was this, you know, I made the mistake of making it about the outcomes. Oh, so I'm going to deliver you this piece of analytics and that piece of analytics and this and that. And it'll be actually all this great data that'll help you understand your customers. And well, the fact of the matter is that there were really only like one or two things that were needed to create this streamlined onboarding process. Okay. It was one analysis of where customers were getting bogged down in the process. And it was a pricing assessment, a competitive pricing assessment. That was it. Not all of this other, a statistical analysis of preferences and trends of product and all of this other stuff, which I threw in because I thought it would bulk up what was going on. But the fact of the matter is that it didn't really create extra value for the customer. Therefore, it didn't really allow me to charge more because they didn't care. I mean, they didn't care. I was working harder to create that because it wasn't helping them really. It was like throwing in all these extra bonuses. And you've heard it too. Like when people sell, for example, business education is a classic example, right? So you sign up for a business education webinar and you want to learn how to do Facebook ads or something like that. I'm just making something up.
Sure.
And so then the person has a Facebook ads program at the end that they're selling. But for a bonus that they're going to throw in for free is writing your own book, right? And you're like, but I don't want to write a book, but it's a bonus. It makes it all worthwhile. You see what I mean? It's
yes.
That kind of stuff that drives us nuts. Do extra work. It's not necessary.
Great. So we need to focus, understand the process and what is the next step in?
The next step is then to map the process to the skill sets. And here is essentially setting yourself up for creating the staff and the people to get it done. So every single step of that process is not equal. Some of it's going to require very strategic thinking and some of it's going to be very tactical. But we take each step and we map it and we say, okay, who's actually going to be able to do this? And by the way, that who can't be me. So I may not have a staff member or have anybody hired to do that. That's okay. For a while, I'm going to be filling in. I'm going to be backfilling, right? Basically, I'm the person who's covering the person who's on maternity leave. And as soon as we figure out, we're going to hire somebody back. But with that mindset, we have a better sense of what it takes to get each of those things done. That helps us understand what our staffing needs are going to be, how we're going to grow the business, and how many new clients I can take on with a given set of staff to execute. And that's really the last piece that needs to be there for us to understand how to fire ourselves from the process. Because as I pointed out, you're not in that step anywhere.
Right. Theoretically, I should not be in that step.
Skill set as business owner is not included. Now, you may be executing it for now, but because we understand the skill set outside of me, I have a plan to fire myself.
Great. Terrific. And what kind of mental shift do service business owners need to make to really embrace this new way of looking at how their company, not they, but their company can deliver their services?
Well, I think you hit on the first one immediately, right? Which is that it is your company and not you. Your business is a company. It's an enterprise. And so therefore, it does exist separate from you and separate from your personality as the business owner. And I think that's the first one. I think it's really critical that we understand we're building an enterprise. It doesn't need to be this huge multi-billion dollar thing, but it is a business. I think the second one that's really critical is what I call the rocket ship syndrome. So when you launch a rocket ship into space, you know, there's these sections of the rocket ship that are filled with fuel and they burn and they're the things which get you into orbit. But once that rocket ship gets into orbit, it jettisons those things. Okay. Our businesses are the same. There are things that we do. There are processes that we undertake in order to get those first clients, in order to get the cash in the door, in order to start the building process. But at some point, we have to jettison those things. Like, for example, me doing everything, right? When you start a business, it probably makes some sense for you to be doing some of the administrative stuff, right? You don't go hire a big administrative staff immediately. It's actually a mistake a lot of very new business owners make because it drains a lot of cash. But at some point, you're going to have to stop. At some point, I have to stop being everything to everyone and grabbing any project that potentially walks through the door. At some point, I have to hone and focus, right? But very much like the rocket ship, we as business owners, we come attached to those sections with the fuel. And as we're sitting up there ready to be stabilized in orbit, we're kind of grabbing a hold of those sections of the rocket ship. You can kind of imagine yourself like clinging to them, to your chest. Please, section of the rocket ship, don't leave me. You got me up here and now I'm floating out here in space. But the problem is that the fuel's gone. That section is now just dead weight. It's not helpful at all. But we have to change. Your business has to change. Your processes have to change. And it'll be the first of many changes that you make as you continue to grow your business. And I think that's a really critical mindset shift that has to be made as well.
Right. That's a great point. And I love the analogy of the rocket ship, although I have to say an image from Dr. Strangelove came into my head, but that's a different matter.
You're writing it all the way down? Is that what Owen was?
Well, you know, and unfortunately, that is sometimes what can happen, as you say, when we get attached to it and we're hanging on and hanging on and hanging on. And 10, 15 years later, we're still hanging on and not seeing the results. We're not seeing, as you point out, the better life that we often want to create because we can't do it because we don't have the time because we're hanging on to the rocket ship.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
I love that analogy. So in terms of also mindset shifts, there, as you say, and there's a new way of thinking about your business, almost as if you are oh, I don't know, the creator looking at little ants on the sidewalk making things happen. How do you also, or do service business owners need to refocus their mindset around the marketing and the way people are attracted to their business and the service offerings?
Yeah, absolutely. So really successful service business owners, they are able to create an authority from which their business is built. Now, here's the thing that a lot of people get confused about. They think, well, if I'm the authority, then I'll never be able to get out of the business. They feel like it's mutually exclusive. Either I can be a personality authority, an expert, or I can create the scalable business that grows and makes a lot of money. The fact of the matter is that these two things are not mutually exclusive. There are people who make a great living off of their name. Now, you have to create the structure to make that work correctly, right? But they're not mutually exclusive. But if you go down, and I happen to find that the authority platform business path is a very lucrative one. And so if you create yourself the authority, you become the expert in that niche, in that focus. Again, a reason why we need to focus, because you can't be the expert in everything, right?
Right.
You change this process by which you're getting customers, and you're moving from chasing clients to attracting them. And I was talking to one of my clients yesterday, and we were actually coaching through the phone call conversation. When you want to, you've got somebody who's interested in purchasing some high ticket service, and you want to be able to close that conversation over the phone. There is a really important part of that conversation that needs to occur in your head, which is very similar to your marketing and sales process. And that's to change the way you look at the sales process from I win, I lose, like as the business owner. If I have a conversation and they sign up, I win. If they have a conversation and they decide not to go with me, I lose. Mm-hmm. You need to remove that mindset completely and shift over to one where it's the prospect who wins or loses. We're the prize. We've already won. We're the expert. We're the authority. And we are going to have a conversation to basically say, hey, Mr. Prospect, Ms. Prospect, how are you going to solve this problem you've identified? How are you going to close this gap we've talked about? I've got the answer for you. It's totally up to you whether or not you want to go in that direction or not. If you do, great, you win. If you don't, no worries, because I've got a line of other people to talk to. Now, whether or not that line exists, we need to act like it does. And this is hard. I admit it's hard. It takes some practice, but it's possible. And it really does come down to understanding, hey, I've got the answer. I actually know how to solve this problem. And if we have that attitude, we start attracting ideal customers rather than chasing them.
Right. And I would think that also goes back to your first point in terms of really, really, really focusing on who you serve best and how you're going to serve them. So that way it's, I know as I've done that in my own business, the more that things come to me that, you know what, it's just not, you know, divorce law, not really what I want to be doing. It's not an area that I enjoy. So right. I am very happy to refer that to somebody else because I've dabbled in it and it's just awful. And I don't, you know, I don't want that experience. I don't want those kinds of issues. I don't want those clients, but I know there are other people who do and will serve them very, very well.
Right. Absolutely. It is because, again, you cannot be the expert in everything. You have to pick. And that means being the expert in an outcome for a particular target market. And when you have focused it down, you understand them. You're in their head. And by articulating the mindset of your prospect, because you know it so well, in language that they understand and that resonates with them, and then painting a picture of the thing they want to get, it's actually really easy to decide whether or not you have an ideal customer or not. Because basically you say, here are the three things that my ideal client is thinking about that keeps them up at night. Does that resonate with you? Yes or no? No? Well, then great. That's great. You're probably not an ideal client of mine because I'm probably not going to help you with whatever the issues are. Yes? Great. Well, this is the outcome that I can create for my ideal clients. Does that outcome appeal to you? Is that something you want to achieve? Yes or no? No? Great. Let me try to refer you to somebody who can create your ideal outcome. I'm not the best fit for you. And There is something very powerful about that. In fact, I've worked with a couple of individual business owners who have tough time with this mindset. And I give them a little bit of an exercise. And so maybe your audience wants to try this if they've ever had trouble with this idea of being the prize rather than chasing clients. And that's to set up a sales conversation explicitly with the purpose of telling the person that they're not a good fit for your business.
Yeah.
Turning them down. And I know it sounds crazy, especially if you're like worrying about the money, but I tell you, this exercise pays off immensely. Now, maybe you can even set up the call with somebody who you already know is not a good fit for your business just to try it. But it is an amazing experience to have a conversation where at the end you say, you know, you sounds great. You're doing some good stuff. I'm not a good fit for you. Maybe I can help you find somebody who is, but I just don't think that I would be able to help you. It's amazing what happens. Oftentimes they try to talk themselves into working with you. You know, I had a conversation with somebody just like this 2 days ago where I told him, no, do not sign up for my program 5 times.
Wow.
And he kept saying, but, and I kept saying, listen, this is not a good fit for you. I'm telling you right now. But the power of being able to do that is one of the things that can help shift your mindset. So if you have trouble with that, try that exercise. Mm-hmm. I know it sounds crazy, but it really works.
Great. So as we round out, I want to close the loop a bit on productizing the expertise, because I know some people may be listening and say, well, you know, I get that there kind of needs to be a process, but am I essentially creating a thing like a McDonald's hamburger that I'm now, you know, am I now creating a product? And does that mean that, you know, my staff is not involved in rolling it out? Are we just talking digital products? Am I just looking at passive income?
Right. That's a great question. Yeah. I mean, I think the word product means a lot of things to different people, right?
Right.
And for me, when I say productize, I mean, take the service, the outcome that you're creating, and turn it into a repeatable process. So you're not creating McDonald's hamburger, but whatever you're creating, you're going to create like a McDonald's hamburger. In other words, there are stations. I mean, I'm going to use the fast food restaurant metaphor here. There are stations, there are ingredients, there are different people with different jobs, and you're going to, you know, move from one thing to the next. Now, it doesn't have to be a bun and a burger and cheese and pickles, but it might be a report or a set of research, or it might be a website that's been created, or it might be a strategy call that has occurred. These steps and these processes, they move down a line. You want to create an assembly line for your outcome. Now, that bugs people sometimes because they say, what I do is so special, it can't possibly be productized. In which case, I say, then you're never going to grow past a certain point. Consulting firms in the United States tend to max out somewhere in the $250,000 to $400,000 a year range. There are exceptions, but the vast majority of consulting firms stop at that stage. Why? Because they're never able to productize what they do, to systematize it enough to start training other people and growing staff. Think about probably one of the most high-end service providers in the business-to-business space, McKinsey, right? Okay. McKinsey Consulting, they are the, you know, if your Fortune 100 company is dying, you're going to bring McKinsey in to solve the problem. Even McKinsey has a process. Even McKinsey has their processes broken down into steps and stages with different staff members doing different things. And that's why they're able to grow past that revenue threshold. So it doesn't necessarily mean that you have to take what you do and turn it into an info product. It doesn't mean you have to turn it into a set of video training programs, a passive income in the classic sense of the word. What it does mean, though, is that you need to be able to explain step one, step two, step three, how you get from A to B in order to deliver the outcome that you've committed to your client that you're going to deliver for them.
Okay. Can you just give us, I know I said that I had one last question, but now I've got another last question because that's how I am. Can you give us an example, either in your own business or a client you've worked with, what that assembly line process looks like?
Sure, absolutely. So for example, In my business today, I work with service businesses that are selling very high ticket service items. So for example, $10,000 and higher. If you're charging $10, $50, $100, $150,000, I can help you grow that business. So that's what I do. Now, when I work with them, these businesses can be very different. Some of them are consulting firms. Some of them do high end, like $25,000 a year programs for people with severe nutrition and diet issues. One of my clients does retreat programs for women that suffer with IBS. Like that's an example, right? So anything like that, that's going to be high ticket. I take them through a 4-stage process. And the first thing we do is we work on their positioning. And that position, and in each of those 4 stages is broken down into multiple sub-stages, but I'm not going to get into that because we don't want people to fall asleep. So, but the 4 stages are pretty clear. First, we work on positioning. And the outcome of that stage is at the end, they're able to clearly articulate in a simple sales conversation who they serve, what they do, and why they do it. It's very crisp and clear. We get that first. Then we move into the second step, which is sales cycle development. That means you are not going to be able to sell something for $35,000 in one day. So there's going to be some process by which people get to know and trust you and they make a buying decision over time. So we need to have a process by which we facilitate that movement from, I don't know who you are, to I'm going to write you a check. Mm-hmm. So we plan that as very specific steps and stages. People can say, okay, this is that, and this is that, and this is what it looks like. Once we've got that strategy nailed, we move on to the third step, which is the implementation of marketing automation to support the sales cycle. So how are we communicating? What do those emails look like, et cetera, right? And then finally, at the end, we talk about the development of authority. We talk about whether books, podcasts, video training, public speaking is in your future as a way of turning the crank on that machine that you just built. So yes, each of those different pieces can be a little fuzzier in terms of what we're doing, but every single client I work with, we run through that process. Does that make sense?
Yes. Yes, it does. And just as you're talking, and I'm thinking about, let's say, my own process for creating a contract for a client, which could apply to consulting firms as well. There is an information gathering stage with the client. Then there is, you know, an assimilation stage in terms of creating a proposal. And there may be, you know, some template types of proposals or contracts. And then there's the customization of that template to fit the client's needs.
Exactly.
And then there may be a step back and forth in terms of talking to the client about the proposal or rolling out the work. And so each one of those stages may not necessarily require the business owner. Mm-hmm. It may, at least for today, in the information gathering stage, but in terms of how do you convert that into a proposal, that's something that could be done by someone else.
Absolutely. And I think a lot of people feel like if something's productized, that means it's kind of reduced down to the lowest common denominator. That's not true either. I mean, some of these stages do require very high skill, right? In the things that you just described, I suspect the customization of the template probably is a very high skill step, right? Mm-hmm. And so therefore, but the point is that not all steps are equal. So when you understand what skill sets are needed for each step, that was that third step of the process of productizing what you do, then you know what you need, what skill sets you need, the kind of people you need, the staff in order to grow that particular process. But if your process is starting from scratch every single time, where I get a really cool person to work with and then we figure it out as we go, you'll never be able to know who's necessary. And frankly, you know, making it up as you go is a extremely high skill set that you probably can't hire at all. And therefore, it's kind of tricky to build a business model around, you know, just, well, I'll just find another superstar like me and then we'll go take over the world. That's tough to do.
No. So would another word for, let's say, productizing the expertise be systematizing the workflow?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Okay,
yep, systematizing the workflow, creating a process for the workflow. However you, those are all great terms. The reason I like productizing is because it allows you to think more in assembly line mode. But process does the same thing, and so does system. I mean, it's all the same thing. Yeah, those are great ways to look at it.
Terrific. Terrific. Well, Frank, you've given us a lot to chew on here in terms of the three steps involved in productizing the expertise or systematizing the workflow, understanding where our mindset needs to shift, and really seeing how we can create a powerful outcome and create repeatable process so that we can scale our service business. So thanks so much for being with us today.
Thank you.
Hey, thanks for listening. Remember, go over to businessexponential.com right now and download our 10 steps to a $1 million business. We lay it out for you step by step, the 10 building blocks that'll have you building and growing your business so it's not so dependent on you. Won't that be a relief? Of course it will. So do it right this minute so you don't forget. You'll see it there on top of the homepage. Go to businessexponential.com.